Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week, every Friday, I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, business owners who have wonderful stories to share. And these are people who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their actionable tips, and some great advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. Excuse me, I'm going to be raspy today, I can tell already. So if you hear silence, that's me muting the phone so I don't cough on you. But today I welcome to the show Cynthia Kay. Cynthia is a passionate spokesperson for small business, and she spends significant time speaking to, teaching, and coaching small business owners while running her own award-winning company. She founded Cynthia Kay and Company Media Production after working in broadcasting. And as a professional broadcaster, she was honored with awards from United Press International, the Associated Press, and numerous regional broadcast awards. She's a graduate of Michigan State University and holds a master's in communications from Western Michigan University. She is also the past chair of the Small Business Association of Michigan and past chair of SBAM's Political Action Committee. She serves on the executive board of the National Small Business Association as the vice president for advocacy, and she and her company have been honored with many, many awards. In fact, she has been named one of Michigan's 50 most influential women 5 times, most recently last year in 2014. Her book, Small Business for Big Thinkers, Unconventional Strategies to Connect With and Win Big Business, was published by Career Press. And she blogs for CEO Magazine and also has her own blog, Biz Thinking. You can find the link to that in the show notes. She has also written a number of articles for The Washington Post, and has been featured in Time Magazine and on NPR. And by the way, please join us in the chat room. We're broadcasting live. You can kind of chime in, ask questions, make observations. And when the show is over, you can download on demand or find us in iTunes. Cynthia, I am so impressed that you have time to come on my show. Welcome.
Well, I was just thinking about that and thinking, wow, a whole
I'm
hour
a busy person.
Of actually sitting and chatting with someone. But I just so appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Denise, and hopefully share some thoughts with some of your viewers that maybe will give them some ideas about things that they can do in their own businesses.
I'm really excited because, as you know, I'm a high-functioning workaholic, and my brain doesn't shut down. I've got a squirrel brain, and it goes and goes and goes and goes. And I think so many people in our audience have the same thing. We're always thinking, we're always looking for opportunities to move ourselves, our clients, our customers, our consumers, and our businesses forward. So I'm really excited to talk with you today. But before we get too far into that, tell us how you started this. You went from being a broadcaster to having this great online business, and I would love to hear that story.
You know, it's interesting. Well, first I'll give you the short version. I got fired. And as my father always says, you're no one till someone fires you. But I like a lot of people in the broadcasting industry, spent significant time working in the field, doing all kinds of wonderful, interesting stories. And there comes a point when I think at the last station that I worked at, I had worked for 4 different owners in 6 years. And anyone who's been through a merger or an acquisition or a buyout knows what that's like when there's constantly new owners. And I just got the bug to own my own business. I, like a lot of small business owners, wanted more control over my life, wanted to be able to create the kinds of products and services that I thought people wanted. And so I made the leap. And, of course, I did come by this desire honestly because my dad was a small business owner, and I just saw the passion that he had for business. And so it was kind of a natural kind of break in my career to say, do I want to go back to work for someone else, or do I want to make the leap and own my own business? And I will tell you, I did that, and I've never looked back. And, in fact, in 28 years, as you well know, you start working on things and the time just flies.
Oh, no kidding. And here's the thing. When you're doing your own kind of work and people think, oh, it's going to be easy, you know, I'm going to have more time. And unless you structure your life very, very carefully as an entrepreneur, you can find yourself working all the time to the detriment of your personal life. Did you find that?
Well, you know, I think in the early years in any business, you do spend a lot more time, and frankly, you sacrifice a lot. I, like many entrepreneurs, missed birthdays and holidays and all kinds of things because I was working. I think you have to have that kind of commitment when you start, but I think if you consistently do it throughout your career, I think it becomes unhealthy. And I will tell you that as I've built my organization, I certainly have lots more time. I mean, I'm serving on boards. I'm getting ready to get my second book out. I'm talking with you for an hour on the phone. So I think I've made a concerted effort to be sure that my team of people is up to speed and that I'm delegating and that I'm doing the work that I should be doing, but not the work that maybe someone else should do. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes of entrepreneurs. We think that we are the only ones who can do a certain task. And what I like to say is we may do that task one way. Someone else may do the task not the same way that we would do, but that's not to say that they can't be as effective. So I love it when I have the opportunity to go on the road and speak to people, and I probably couldn't do that if I didn't make a big effort to get employees, the right people, working for the company and get them trained up.
Well, you said something very important there, and that's delegating. Look, I'm a web developer and an online business manager, and I'm guilty of everything you just said. Sometimes it's just easier and quicker for me to do it myself, but at the end of the day, when you look at those little time bleeds, you actually lost money and you lost time. But sometimes
the other thing too is, do you not think that I think a lot of entrepreneurs do things that really someone else should do. So I'll give you a for example. You're a web developer. That's a very specific skill. Lots of people think they can do what you do. What they don't realize is they probably will not be as effective as you are. They won't be able to do it as quickly as you can, and that may be something they should be outsourcing instead of doing themselves. So I'm really of the belief that business owners need to sort of take that step back, look at their own staff. Sometimes let them take longer to do a task than you could do if you did it yourself, but then the next time they get faster and faster. And then also look at who should be those outside resources that you need to access so you're not doing the things that really you're not going to be as effective at.
Absolutely. Do you have standard operating procedures for these types of things? Because I find...
We do.
Yeah, well,
one of the things that I talk about is in the book, and there's a whole chapter called "When It Comes to Operations, Think Like a Big Business, Even If You're Not a Big Business." We actually have systematized pretty much everything we do. We track all of the activities. We make sure that we have people cross-trained on things so that if something has to happen, it doesn't stop just because I'm not here. And I think sometimes entrepreneurs create a bottleneck in their own business because they think that they're the only ones who can do something. And I will grant grant you that maybe sometimes I can do it faster, but I think you need to take that step back.
No, there's no question about that, and I have learned that the hard way. Thank you very much. Because when you think the way a lot of entrepreneurs do, you're thinking all the time, and you've gained these skills. I mean, look at you. You went from broadcasting, which is a very specific set of skills, and now you're creating standard operating procedures, and you're doing all these fairly technical things that you probably were not trained to do, but you saw that you needed to do it. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to get caught up in all of this, and then after a while you realize that you're not bringing in any income, you're not moving yourself forward because you're so caught up in the day-to-day stuff that really you should not be doing.
Well, and you know, I think sometimes as business owners, you know, I have a philosophy that says don't do those things. Don't be afraid to spend money to do things. So I'll give you an example. You know, I look at some customers and they go, really, you spent, you know, X amount of dollars on software just to track everything. I say, you know what? I look at everything that I'm doing as an investment, not as an expense. And I think sometimes entrepreneurs will say, well, I don't need that, or, you know, I can get along without something. But I think a really smart business person looks at the money they're investing in their business as something that's going to make them more productive. You know, one example in my own thing, we have 5 different video editing suites, and we came to a point where we were looking at networking everything so that we could move videos through our system much faster. Now, to do that, we needed to spend $30,000 on storage, teraflop storage. Some people would look at that and say, wow. I look at it and say, look at how much more efficient that made us. Look how much more we can get through our place, and look how much better we can satisfy our customers who need things on tight timelines. So, you know, I think it's about having the right people. It's about having the tools, investing in the business. And if you really want to set yourself apart from your competitors, you have to do some of those things. And when you do them, you become operationally excellent. And, you know, we've often talked about operational excellence in terms of people who make things, manufacturing or, you know, but service businesses, all of us really need to be operationally excellent in our own realm.
Listen, I agree with you, absolutely. How, and I have this question for you, it's been popping into my head ever since you started talking. How do you convince entrepreneurs who may be working on a budget or a very tight budget? Many entrepreneurs are self-funded. I mean, that's just the way we start our business. It's hard to get a business loan. We may not want to get a business loan. Mm-hmm. And often the big thing is, oh, I can't afford that, which I think is a defeatist attitude, especially based on what you just said. But what advice can you give people who say, I really can't afford that, as opposed to I need to invest in that? How can you kind of tweak that mindset?
Well, you know, it's funny, you just brought back a memory, because I know that when I started the business, I put a second mortgage on my home to get the money for the startup. So, I did that personal guarantee, and then I took money out against my. So I so understand that. And frankly, access to capital always has been and probably always will be an issue for small business owners. But I think some of this it's a technique I call self-talk. I talk to myself and I literally play out the scenarios. So, for example, I say, all right, if I'm spending $30,000 on teraflop storage, what's the period of time over which I am going to recoup those dollars? And what I have found is that when I make smart investments, the return is very fast. It really is. So I think you have to talk to yourself and say, all right, look, what happens if I don't make these investments? What happens if I don't spend this money? And, you know, a typical example of this would be that people don't like to spend money on marketing or on media production because they say, well, how do I quantify that? But I think within reason, I think people need to really think about what will it do for them, not what kind of an expense it is. I think the other thing is that I think entrepreneurs sometimes don't do the necessary shopping around to really vet the resources that they're using or the products. They go to the easiest source. And so, you know, we're smart shoppers in our personal lives. We have to be smart shoppers in our business lives. We need to really look at what value are we getting for things and have we shopped it. And that doesn't necessarily mean you always go with the cheapest price, but you do look at what's a great value. And I think that's something that really plays out in everything that I do. I know people are often price comparing. What I always will say to people is, you know, what's the cost of not doing something or doing it badly?
Oh, I see that in the virtual assistants industry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People will say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to pay but $15 an hour. Well, then you need an employee. That's a whole other story. That's a whole other chat. But the thing is, like you say, if you want the work done properly, you need to go with the person or the company who can deliver everything you need and do it seamlessly. And you're not going to get that probably for cheap. So basically what I'm hearing you say is that you're projecting a conclusion and you're working back from that conclusion to determine,
exactly,
is this a good investment?
Yeah. I mean, I really do that. And in fact, you know, that's one of the things that I even use when I'm talking to potential customers who will come to me and will say, well, Cynthia, why is it that your service is X percent more expensive than someone else's? And I talk to them about the value of what we bring to them and how the efficiencies that we will bring and the things that we do that will save them money on future projects. So, I think that value is something that people really have, we've kind of thrown it out in some respects. You know, people will say, well, I can go shop it and I can get the cheapest price or I can do this. And I think what we're seeing is a resurgence of people, both customers and in our own businesses, where people are really looking at what is the value that you bring. You know, I actually did interviews with buyers for my book, purchasing agents, and I asked them to talk to me about their philosophy. And I think most people make the assumption that purchasers, any kind of purchasers, are really relying on price. And what most of the buyers told me is that's not at all the case, that they seriously are looking for the value, but that you have to show them where the value is. One of the purchasing agents put it in a really simple example. He said, let's say I'm buying pencils, and I need to buy a huge quantity of pencils, and I look at a per-unit cost of this pencil that this supplier has and a per-unit cost that supplier B has. And supplier B is more expensive than supplier A. But supplier B comes and says to me, the reason my pencil is a little more expensive is mine's got an eraser on it. And if you buy pencil over there, you're going to have to go buy erasers. You've now shown him the value of why your product is worth a little bit more. So I think that value is something that we all really need to be focused on. And I have a long-term approach to business. I know some people take a more short-term view. I look at every aspect of my business with a long-term lens. Is this a customer that I want for the long term? Is this a supplier to my business that I want for the long term? You know, are these employees that are going to stay with me? I think when we do that, and then, by the way, that's not the way most of the country operates these days. I think we've become pretty short-sighted about making decisions. We do what's best in the short term. I have found that when I make those decisions based on a long-term view, invariably those are the best decisions, and they're the decisions that put us ahead in the long run. I mean, I will tell you that during the midst of the most recent downturn, I was spending money on equipment. And people were saying, I can't believe you're spending money on equipment now. And I go, well, now is the time, because I'm gearing up for all the pent-up demand that is going to come back, and I'm going to be prepared, whereas a lot of people will not be. And the fact that we trained up our people and we bought equipment and improved our systems during the economic downturn, when things started to come back, we were poised to take advantage of all of that business.
So when it did come back, you already had your value proposition ready to present.
Absolutely.
I think that is so important, because so many people, and again, I have to refer back to the virtual assistance industry. I mentor and coach a lot of people in that industry. And the one thing that I find in common with all of them is they cannot seem to present their value proposition, what they do that, you know, is going to be of serious value to their clients. And I don't know if it's a brain freeze or they just don't want to toot their own horn. I'm darned if I understand it. There's some psychology at work there that I don't get.
Well, really, you know, I've got a whole chapter in my book that says learn to brag.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that, A, you're able to articulate what it is that you do well, that no one else does as well as you. You have to articulate that, and then you have to not be afraid to say that. And I will make one comment. I think women are actually quite bad at this. I think men tend to be better at kind of bragging and talking about what they do. I think as women, sometimes we've been taught it's not good to do that. And I think we probably have to get over it.
I agree with you. And one of the best things that you can do, and I tell this to people all the time, if you can't brag on yourself, find somebody who can. You know, make sure that you are networking, connecting with people who have influence in the areas that you want to go. Serve them. Make sure that they understand that you are of value. You become their friend. Promote their products. Do whatever you need to do in a genuine kind of a way. And let me tell you, you will get referred all day long. So there are
I'm not quite sure how you spread your message, but I am guessing referrals.
I brag.
You brag and you get referrals. I like to let our customers brag about us, because when they do that, then the customer who comes to us, that potential customer that comes to us, already is not looking to get the basics. They know that they can trust us. They're looking for us then to really dive in and come up with some solutions for them to whatever the problem is.
Exactly. I have a client who is so impressed with the work that I've been doing with him, which is actually a new kind of a product that I came up with just literally out of the blue, and I've been using him as my crash test dummy. Bless his heart, he wasn't offended by that. He said, use me. Listen, he goes out on the road. He's an author and a speaker, and in the last week, I've gotten 4 referrals from him. 4, and they're all high-quality referrals. I didn't ask him for it, but he's so impressed that he just said, I need to introduce you to Denise. And that's just kind of how you do it if you don't want to go out and say, hey, look at me, which, by the way, is nobody really wants a braggart. But you do have to get out, and let's go back to that whole value proposition. You have got to be able to articulate how you can bring value to your client, consumer, whoever it is that you're trying to partner with or sell to. I mean, it really is all about the value.
Well, and one more way to do this, and this is a simple one that a lot of business owners miss, is you mentioned that, you know, I've been named one of the most influential women 5 times. I think a lot of business owners do not seek out those competitions where they can get recognized for what they are doing.
Good point.
And in every industry, there are awards. So, for example, the 101 best and brightest companies to work for, or one of the most admired companies, or there are awards for diversity efforts. There are awards for suppliers who have reached quality goals. I want the listeners to really think about, what are some of those opportunities where I can throw my hat in the ring, get recognized, and then put that on your website or put it on your, you know, your voice message, or, you know, link to an award site where you're noticed. Those are things that it's free advertising, quite frankly, and it's a credibility builder.
I just had a light bulb moment. I had never thought of that. And I see it in action all the time, but it never occurred to me that this is something we as small business owners need to do for ourselves. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think sometimes people think you have to do big, huge efforts. I would tell you that there are a lot of smaller, less expensive things that you can do that really can get you noticed. So I think it's the other thing that I try to tell people is that sometimes you have to give a little something away. I call it give something away, get more business. So I'll give you a for example. I will get a call from someone and they're thinking about working on a project of some sort. And I will sit down with them, and I will spend an hour. I may give them some creative ideas, or I might, you know, if I'm not the right source, I will send them to someone that I think is the right source. I'm giving away what I feel to be valuable information. And I often say to people, when you do a little giving away of something, you get a lot more business back. Probably my best example of this is that there was a customer I was working with, and I was consistently saying to them, you're costing yourself money because we're doing a lot of rework on your projects because you're not looking at this in terms of approvals throughout the process. And I said, you know what, I would love to do a short little seminar for your marketing communications people about what's really the best way to work with a media supplier, and what are the questions you should ask, and what should you be prepared to do, and I promise it won't be a commercial. I'm not going to plug my products, but I think I can really help your marketing communications people be better. And they said, we'll give you an hour. And I said, well, I really need an hour and a half. And then they said, oh, by the way, it's all the way on the other side of the country. It was in California, and I'm in Michigan. So I got on a plane. I flew across the country. I did an hour and a half seminar. And by the time I got back to Michigan, I had calls from people saying, I have a project I want you to work on. So I gave away some of my time and my expertise, but I got it back, you know, fivefold. So I think we have to also, as we look at what is it that we are doing that we know that no one else knows, how can we help make someone else's job or life better, give them a better product, and give a little something away so that they understand the value of what we bring.
And I love that. So I have to ask, did you do this at your own cost, or did they pay for
your
flight? I did. There you go. I figured that, but I needed to know.
I paid for the flight, and I have often done that. And sometimes people will say, well, but it cost you money. And I go, well, I actually thought of that as sort of a marketing cost. That's a little bit of cost. It's a flight.
Right. Right.
It's my time. But I think when you have that approach, I think people really respect and value what you're giving to them. Now, there are those incidences where you, we've all done this, we've given something away, and then when someone actually is ready to make a purchase, they don't come to you. And we kind of feel like we've been put upon, right? You know, well, I gave them something. I think we have to get over that. We have to think we're not going to hit on it all the time. But some of my biggest customers have come to me because I have been willing to do things like put together a demo for them or write them a sample script or sit down and coach them on some things. I have gotten in the car. I have gotten on planes. You know, I think it's important to know when to show up. And when we do those things, we really can demonstrate. Because, you know, as much as I love, and by the way, I love radio, I love television, I love, you know, Skype, all of those things, I think there are some times when there's nothing like getting in a room with someone and actually having that conversation. But you have to know when to do it.
How do you know when? I mean, is it just a kind of a gut instinct, or is it something where you really want to help these people, even if there's no immediate return to you? I mean, how do you know when?
Well, I think, for one thing, I think you have to have your antenna up. I think most of us are pretty good judges of people who are serious about wanting to form a partnership with us. We all know those folks who say they're basically shopping you just so they can go back to an existing supplier and get a better price.
Right.
So I think you have to have your antenna up. I think you have to ask some really good probing questions. This is probably where my background in broadcasting and investigative reporting has been extremely helpful, because you talk to people about what is it they're trying to accomplish. You know, what are they not getting from either something they're doing or a supplier is doing for them? You need to ask some good pre-qualifying questions. And then I think you have to look at the potential of, you know, what the value of a project is over, you know, the lifetime of working with that customer. And, you know, if you're looking at it in that long-term lens, I think you the ones that are not serious wash out pretty quickly, and then you move on. But the ones that there's real value, and I think the other thing is it's not always the customer that you think it's going to be. Sometimes I call it paying attention to small customers or small projects. One of my customers that's been with me for 28 years, I started by working on a $2,500 project with one of their subsidiaries. And they, the project was one that their current supplier said was too small for them. They weren't interested. And I said, well, I can do that project. And by the way, I've got some ideas for how we can make it better. And that turned into a very long-term relationship. So sometimes, you know, we think we need to go after all the big opportunities. I would argue that paying attention sometimes to the smaller opportunities, the ones that other people maybe don't want to do, or they consider it a hassle, or it's not worth the amount of time they're going to spend. Some of those small things that I have done have actually gotten me very large customers. And the other thing I will tell you, too, is sometimes we pay attention to the wrong people in organizations. We think we always need to talk to the president or the CEO or the marketing director or the top purchasing agent, you know, whoever that person is at the top echelons of the company. I think we're missing often those people who are maybe in the middle of the company, or sometimes it's the admin who can get you on someone's schedule. And paying attention to all of those people and taking those meetings can really get you into an organization and get you moved up the ladder a lot faster.
I've seen that before, and it does make sense. I mean, the admin is she's the wolf at the door. You know, she's the one that's going, she, he, right. They're going to either get you in or throw your resume or your offer, whatever it is. It can hit the garbage can before you even leave. So, you know, sometimes those are the people that you really want to talk to.
You know, and I do think we often are, you know, as business people, we have to be so good in so many areas. You know, a lot of business people, you're the sales force, you're the HR director, you're doing the work, you're the cleaning crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we wear lots of different hats in business. And, you know, it's hard to be good at all of them. But we have to really have a working knowledge of every aspect of the business. You know, some of the best business people that I have seen over the years are the ones who have come up through the ranks and done every single job in a company because they know the operation.
Right, and that makes perfect sense. I mean, if you look at it just from a work-from-home standpoint, which I do, I can mow the grass. Do I want to? No. It's hot out there, so I hire people. You know? I mean, think about the things that you hire out, and you hire them to professionals who can do them quicker and easier and far more effectively than you can. And then I think translate that into your business. And this is what I wanted to ask you, because so many people, when they're first starting out or they're in the first 3 to 5 years of their business and money is tight, they may be making a profit, but it's a small one. And they're just so reluctant to say, oh, you know, I've got to hire some of this stuff out. I would love to hear you give some advice about that, because I think it's a false economy. You know why I think that? Been there, done it.
Well, before I do that, let me turn the tables on you. What didn't you hire out that hired out? Can I play
everything.
Reporter for a minute?
Everything. When I first started out, you know, I'm a web developer. I have a computer science degree. I'm a nerd. I have an invisible pocket protector. I wear stilettos, but yeah, I still have an invisible pocket protector. And you know, me being me, knowing that I can just do everything perfectly, because a lot of us are a little bit anal retentive. I just did it all on my own. We do like control. I think it's part and parcel of being an entrepreneur. And it took me the longest kind of time to give up some of that control and to train people to do what I needed to do. And like you said earlier, to understand that they're not going to do it the way I did it and forgive them, which is which sounds tough, but it's like, you know, you didn't do it the way I wanted it done. Well, then I'd have to look at it and say, but it got done. I'm good. We're all good. But it was a process. So in the very beginning, I didn't outsource a darn thing. Now, part of that was because when I first started out in 2000, there really wasn't a way to outsource anything. I mean, we barely had GUI, GUI, graphical user interface. I mean, it's only in the last 10 years, perhaps, 8, 9, 10 years that we've been able to build teams online and to connect with other people and to get coaching and mentoring and online training programs. So in the very beginning, I was just about forced to do it, which sadly suited my, you know, kind of commanding personality anyway. But I had to really learn. Bossy is the word I'm looking for, but I had to really learn over time, and as things came my way, that I could learn to outsource and could learn to teach and learn and, you know, just structure my business differently. But it was a mental process, I have to tell you. It's hard to give up that control.
And I think there's a couple of things that out of the gate people need to pay attention to. And I'll give you an example. A really great lawyer is worth every dollar that you spend with that person, because some of the contracts and the things that I did early in the setup of my business, years later, saved me, because there were things that were written into those contracts that were extremely beneficial. Now, I had to pay for that, but I think having a really good legal source and someone who understands business, okay, I think that's invaluable. In the interest of being completely transparent, my brother is a lawyer, although he is not the lawyer that set the business up for me. But I think having that as a resource is great. I did not hire an HR person because we're too small. But I did get some really great advice from people about employee books, handbooks, processes that needed to be put in place. And this is where, honestly, if business owners are smart, they can get a lot of these resources, legal fees, HR work, all of this through some of the smaller associations that they have who vet these resources for them. So, for example, in Michigan, if you're part of the Small Business Association of Michigan, there are a number of suppliers that will provide at very reasonable cost products and services to businesses. Now, you got to look for those people. Sometimes it's the chamber. On a national level, the National Small Business Association offers a lot of services in terms of things that entrepreneurs can capitalize on. And if they had to go out and buy some of those things on their own, they wouldn't have the buying power. So I know people will say, I don't have the money, but there are ways that you can bring these resources to the table and you can access them. I think you also have to be careful how you access them, because what generally ends up happening, I think, with business owners is that they're not paying attention to what they're asking someone to do for them, and so costs can get out of hand. So you have to be very clear about what you need from them and determine what those costs are going to be up front. But I think you need to look at what your core strength is. My core strength is not in doing payroll for my employees or in producing 1099s for my suppliers. There is an account that does that a lot faster than I could do it. I could do it, but I shouldn't do it.
Exactly.
So, you know, and maybe here's the litmus test. The hour that you spend doing whatever that task is that an outside resource could do, if you spent that doing what you're really good at, how much more money can you make in that 1 hour?
Right. That's exactly right. But I can hear some people in our audience. I can hear it because I had these same kind of, oh, no, I can't do that in the very beginning because I self-funded. Everything I did was self-funding.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do. I mean, my business is, you know, self-supporting, obviously, but many people just, they're thinking, okay, how am I going to find the money for an accountant? How am I going to find the money, you know, for a virtual assistant? How am I going to find the money for, you know, somebody to produce video for me? Do you have any advice for people who are saying, I mean, they're immediately putting up those money barriers, like, oh, I can't do it, I can't do it. I think you can
do
it,
so
but I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
My first employee handbook, I didn't pay anyone to do it for me. I actually went to someone that I knew at a larger company, and I said, I need some help. You know, as business owners, we're not very good about asking for help.
No.
I need some help. And he said, Cynthia, here's the handbook that we use. Here's a few changes that I would make. He essentially gave me the crib on how to do that. I think we need to develop a network of people who will do things for us. I will tell you, I've taken a chance and done videos on spec for some companies because I knew they couldn't afford it, right? But I knew that if that product took off, I would have a great customer. So what is it that, you know, what do you need to pay for, and where can you get some help from some people? And there are resources. I mean, there are a lot of resources for people. There are people who volunteer their time through SCORE, which is, you know, these are senior executives, where they'll go out and help coach businesses. There are economic development services. You got to look for them. But there are economic development programs where you can get some free advice and some free counseling. It takes a little to look for those kinds of things, but there are some resources that you can access, and there are people who will help you. I mean, I've literally picked up the phone several times and called people and said, okay, I've got an issue with the business here, and I don't quite know how to manage this one. And people love to be asked to help.
They do. Absolutely do.
Yeah,
you know,
entrepreneurs,
I find, are really generous people. I mean, there are very few exceptions. We're generous with our time. We're generous with our resources. We want you to succeed. Did I lose you? Oh, no. Cynthia, are you still there? I hate it when that happens. Okay, it looks like she may have to call back in. So anyway, look in the show notes if you want to find any.
Are you there?
Are you back? Yeah,
I
lost
am.
You for a second.
I was
commencing to panic, just so you know.
No, don't panic. I'm here.
Okay.
But I do think that there are people who love to help. And, you know, you want to be careful you don't take advantage of that, and that when you can afford to pay people, you do. But I also think that there are resources out there, and you have to find them. Some people will look at you and go, what, you're crazy? You want me to do this? But, you know, if you don't ask, you won't find those people. And I also think that there are projects that I know we've worked on when I first was getting into the business and I had to hire voice talent, and I couldn't really afford to pay some of the going rates that people had. I was pretty honest with people and said, look, I don't have a huge budget on this thing, but if you can help me out with this so that I can start to accumulate a lot of samples of work so that I can show other people, I'll send the business back your way. And I have done that over the years. The people who helped me are the people that I will consistently send business to, and when I have budget on projects, they're the first ones I think of, because they were willing to give me their knowledge, their talent, they were willing to help. So business people are generous people. They know the struggles that other business people have. So I think you have to identify those people. And then you also have to be realistic about what's it going to take for you in your business. Because if you consistently don't have money to do stuff, then maybe you need to be re-looking at that business plan. Maybe that's not a viable business plan because you're not making money.
That's right. Now, one of the things that you've done – we've got about 10 more minutes here. This is about, this has been a fast hour. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and you mentioned it just a bit at the top of the show, is about creating an organization that's operationally efficient and creative and entrepreneurial. One of the big things that I hear all the time, I have this conversation with myself, in fact, is time management. I would love to hear some tips and advice on time management because we, like you said, we wear so many hats. We do so many things. We do them well. How do you winnow out what should be done, what shouldn't be done, what can be later? I mean, just I know that's two questions within a question, so I'm going to shut up and let you take over.
Well, all right, so in the interest of time, first of all, I think that we tend to waste a lot of time because we get pulled in so many directions. I am really big on blocking out a period of time, either at the beginning of my day or, quite frankly, sometimes it's in the evening after I've left work and I've gone and worked out and I've got a fresh mind and I can sit down and do some things. But I like to have a plan, and I think so often we don't, and I hold myself accountable for what I'm going to get done on a given day, and I'm also huge on holding my clients accountable. If you need an hour of my time, you get 1 hour of my time. I think sometimes we're not conscious of how much we can actually do when we've given some pre-thought to what needs to be done, set up those objectives, and then really stick to that time frame. The other thing that I think happens is that we get pulled away into side projects. And we all tend to, someone is in the office and they need you to do something and you think I need to do that right now. And what happens is we're not more productive just because we're putting out all those fires. What we should do is we should be delaying things. So I think having a really good idea of in the morning or at night getting some quiet, I call it quiet time, when I really can think about what needs to be done makes me a lot more efficient during the day. The other thing I think we really need to think about is that we let people into our space that maybe we shouldn't. So I'll give you a for example. I have a lot of folks who are sales folks who want to call on me and want to tell me about it. And I say to them, I will give you 5 minutes and you have to stand up when you come in my door because I'm not going to sit down and take a lot of time. I call them stand-up meetings. You know, I stand up and I go, give me the pitch. And if they start to get off track, I go, bottom line, what is it you need? You need to tell people that your time is valuable. I told someone the other day who wanted to come in and give me a pitch on using a new service. I said, quite frankly, I'm at the point right now where unless you're paying me, you don't get on my schedule. Now, you can call me in after the first of the year, and I'm happy to talk to you then. But we've got to take control of that schedule. We can't let other people, you know, even customers sometimes, kind of sidetrack us. Now, if a customer truly has a need, we are extremely responsive. But I think a lot of times when there are emergencies, it's because of a lack of planning. So I also know people who do things. Now, I don't do this, but here's a technique that might work for some people for time management. They only check their email like mid-morning, at lunch, and mid-afternoon. In other words, they're not constantly checking.
Right.
They are blocking it so that at specific times they will go in, answer everything, and then move back to what they're doing. I know that works for some people.
It works for me, and it took me a while before I could figure that out. But otherwise, I would be constantly in my email account, and I don't allow my phone to ring in my office either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you call me, when you call my toll-free number, you can leave a message. I get an MP3 in my email, and I call you back.
Mm-hmm.
I have to manage my distractions.
Yeah, and it really does depend on the industry. But time management is more important for entrepreneurs and small business owners than for anyone else. Because when you're in a big company and you have a lot of people to do things and you have admins and you have lots of resources, you know you can afford to waste some time. We as entrepreneurs cannot afford to waste time. Time is money. And the other thing I guess I would also tell you is that I think it's really important for entrepreneurs to take time away from their business. We think we're being so productive, and sometimes we are simply spinning our wheels. We need to get away and get fresh perspective and fresh eyes on what we're doing, and then we can come back and really be productive. And I'm consistently looking for ways that we can streamline our processes and can do things better and faster. Continuous improvement. I don't care if you're a one-person operation or you've got, you know, lots of employees. We all need to be focused on continuous improvement. And think of yourself that way. What can I do to make this better? And if we do that, the time issue, I think, starts to work its way out. And the other thing is that when you get to that place where you really are finding you cannot accomplish the work, you need to think about adding staff. And often entrepreneurs wait too long before they bring people in, and it's that constant thing about, well, do I wait until I have the business and then hire the staff, or do I hire the staff so I'm trained up? And boy, that's a hard one to make a judgment call on.
It really is, and you know, I've been on both sides of that aisle. Cynthia, you said something that I think is so. We said two somethings that I think are so important, and one was that hour, you know, and time management. Listen, and we like you said, we get caught up. We're always working, and you know, things can kind of slide. What I found, and I just kind of implemented this into my life recently, and I'm loving it. But I decided to take an hour every day, 1 hour, where I just walk away from my desk And don't get me wrong, I'm constantly walking away from my desk. My office is in my home. I'm like a jack-in-the-box. I'm up and down, up and down, up and down, but it just may be a trip outside to go say hi to the dog and chase squirrels. It may be me running to the dryer and throwing in a load of laundry. I am an entrepreneur, but I work from home. But I have decided recently in the last month to take an hour that is dedicated to just me, just mm-hmm. me. And I will take that hour, and you've been struggling to get my garage cleaned out, don't we all? I mean, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
My attic, my spare bedroom. I look at my spare bedroom, which is beautiful, I think, but right now it's acting like a lumber room. I've got containers in there. I've got boxes in there. You really can't make it to the bed. If I had an overnight guest, they'd wind up on the couch. So the rest of my house is immaculate. That spare bedroom, not so much. My garage, oh, my God. And every time I would look at these, it would just overwhelm me, like, oh, it's going to take hours, it's going to take days, and then I would talk myself out of it. So what I did was every single day, Monday through Sunday, I take 1 hour, and I tackle something. And at the end of that hour, if it's not finished, oh, well. But I got a lot done in that hour. Look, I'm walking around, you know, this is only 3 or 4 weeks into it. You ought to see the sheer amount of work that I've got done that I just kept putting off because it was just too big to tackle. And I'm
well,
so excited.
I think that
so now,
works with
every
all
day.
Kinds.
Yeah. Now every day I'm like, oh, what am I going to do for my hour today? I find it very exciting. Go figure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, often when you get a huge amount of work, breaking it down into smaller tasks does a couple of things. It helps you to sort of get a better handle on the project. But the other thing it does is it allows you to accomplish something. And when we accomplish something, we're so excited to go accomplish the next thing.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
You get that sense of reward that you did something, you made progress.
Well, the trick for me was, you know, I would get to that hour because I would watch it. My time is very important, like everybody's is. And I would want to keep going. Well, no, I can't. I have to go back to business today. So there's a certain amount of discipline in there, but I can stand back with my hands on my hips and go, oh, good girl. So it's very exciting.
Absolutely.
So and, you know, logically, I've always known this. I mean, Brian Tracy teaches this. There's so many, you know, teachers who teach this. It just never sunk into my little pea brain. Once I finally decided to do it, it's like, ugh. It's like, I knew this. Why didn't I do it? Well, apparently I didn't want to. Now I want to.
It's the discipline. And honestly, when someone says to me, I can't, what that says to me is you don't want to.
You won't. That's right.
You won't.
Yeah. Can't is a bad word.
Yeah. You know, we people say, what's your favorite word? My favorite word is doable. Mm-hmm. All things are doable when we focus on them.
Absolutely. And I think that finding that focus and that kind of want to can be a problem when you're an entrepreneur. There just has to come a tipping point where you say, I'm going to do this, whatever it is, and you're going to mm-hmm. do it. So I wanted to ask you very quickly, how do you evaluate business opportunities, big, small, and how do you know when not to say, okay, this is just not in my wheelhouse? I mean, are there any,
mm-hmm.
is there any advice you can give our audience?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to know when not to compete. So there's a couple of things that I say to people. First, look at the opportunity and say to yourself, does the work really fit into your core capabilities, or is it going to require you to learn a whole new set of skills? And might it take you too far away from your mission? I mean, that's one thing. The other thing I look at is if you are putting yourself in a position where one customer or where one opportunity is going to put you at risk for meeting your commitments to other customers, it's going to suck up a lot of your time and your capability, you might want to think twice about that. That may not be a good opportunity because you know, sometimes we go after things that, frankly, you know, we're happier if we lost the opportunity because there's too much risk associated with it.
Yeah, I've been there.
I also will tell you that I am big on looking at, do I really want to work with this client? is this client really going to value what I offer them? Will they take my advice? Because if they aren't going to take your advice and aren't going to work with you, the result's not going to be good, and eventually they will blame you instead of themselves. So I think that's important. And then the last tip I give to people is, and I've seen this time and time again, sometimes the margins that they want you to work on are too thin, and I think you need to walk away from projects that you think are not going to be profitable, because there is another project or another customer that will pay you what you are worth. And if you are working on something that is, you know, just sort of a losing proposition, they're taking away your capacity. So there are jobs. I had this happen recently where someone came to me and wanted me to produce something, and the budget was not appropriate for the amount of work. And I basically thanked them very nicely and said, "I think we're not the person you want to work with." So I think you have to have courage as a business owner. That means sometimes you send clients away. You must always be thinking about, how is this going to contribute to my base business, get me the kind of work that I want to do, that I'm proud to do and I'm excited about, and that is going to pay me appropriately.
And that goes back to your long-term strategic planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
Absolutely.
You don't want to take on clients who, for whatever reason, they're not a good fit, or you have to work so hard for it that, like you said, you're taking attention away from other projects. And when they end badly, the Internet's a big place and people chat. You
mm-hmm.
just, you want to look at what could potentially go wrong before you take these projects on, if you take them on.
Yeah, so I think it's as important to know when not to compete as to know when to compete.
I think that is excellent advice. Cynthia, you have given me so much to think about, and I've had so many light bulb moments. It has been a phenomenal interview. And thank you for being here. I know you're a busy woman, and you spent an entire hour with me, and I'm very grateful for that.
Well, it was truly my pleasure, and thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. It's great.
I love what I do. Can you tell?
I can tell.
It's fun. It used to be when I, you know, as before I started on this adventure, if you will, that I dreamed in color. Now I dream in HTML and short codes. It's a sad life.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Denise. It truly has been my pleasure.
And mine as well. Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Cynthia Kay. And I will see you next week. Cynthia, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.